Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Block of Front Porch Conversation on Justice. It seems like one of them days I'm getting tongue-tied. I don't know what it is. And I know I got up early this morning, but we're ready for this show, Front Porch Conversation on Justice. And we're happy to have today with us our guest, April McCullough. And April is going to talk to us today. We're going to have a great conversation anyway, April, about some things that I know are dear to your heart. And you're also close to mine, and also for those who are out there listening, and if you would like to join in the conversation, feel free to dial 929-477-3074. With that being said, April, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks for having me, Charles.
Well, the conversations that we've had in the past have helped me to grow somewhat. So I think it's time that we need to share some of that insight.
Sure.
With the world, to be frank about it, with the world.
the whole world.
Yeah, the whole world. You know, including all three of us. So anyway, tell us something about April.
Yeah, well, I live in Tampa, Florida now. Charles, you and I got to know each other probably starting last year, right, up in Virginia Beach when I was the outreach director at Grace Bible Church looking for a partnership, and you were with Jobs for Life. So that's how we got connected. And my family recently relocated back here in Tampa, and my husband's a pastor serving at a church in the area. And I've got three kids, and I am figuring out what's next for me in this season of life in my transition right now.
What brought you to
kind of me?
Yeah, I mean, this season of life. Okay, we'll look at that for a moment. What was that transitioning period that brought you to the point where you are now in terms of justice issues?
Yeah, I think on and off my whole life, I've been oriented towards people who are hurting physically. I studied international affairs in college and Latin American studies, and started kind of peeling back the layers of the history and impact of colonialism, and envisioned myself going into human rights work. And you know how life takes you on journeys, and there are detours and all that kind of stuff. So I would say the past 12, 13 years, I've tried to find my way back, quote, end quote, to work that helps people. And I've been fortunate to be able to do it from within the church, either as a volunteer, and then the last 3 years when I was in Virginia on staff as outreach director. But the more that I got involved with, say, homeless outreach or first time I was in Tampa, I was getting involved with some organizations that combat sex trafficking in our area. And so the more you kind of get under the hood and you listen to people's stories, you start to see a common thread in that, how do you say it? You just begin to ask why. You just begin to ask why. So why is it that this person, because they were born in this part of town, in this situation, why are they hungry? Why is this girl more vulnerable to being recruited by a pimp? And so you just start to ask questions of why. And as I've encountered many different people and stories and heartbreak, my journey of asking why has led me to justice issues and issues that are more systemic than I first realized.
And I see, I mean, you said something about the involvement that you've been able to work in this relational piece in the church. And how has the church, those church environments that you've worked in, shaped your thoughts at this point in terms of your, and I'm going to go straight to the advocacy part.
Sure. Okay. So your question is, how has my work from within the church as being someone on staff impacted my understanding of, can you rephrase it one more time?
Yeah, sure. I mean, at this juncture in life, you're transitioning, I would assume, more into the advocacy side. Since you discovered the why, and you started asking the why question. So how has the church impacted that part of your life at this point? I mean, either way, negatively, or has it opened your eyes to certain things, or has it been a positive influence? And if so, how?
Okay. Well, I can point to my experience, and I've grown up in within the church in several different denominations, but if you were to kind of put it all under one umbrella, it would be more conservative, evangelical. Grew up in a super charismatic church and, you know, on a little hillside in California, and then have been mostly involved in more like pseudo-Baptist churches, or they take on non-denominational, but when you look at where the lead teachers went to seminary, et cetera, there's a strong Baptist influence. So those churches have always been supportive, like, yeah, April, go, you know, go start that partnership in Haiti and let's see how we can come alongside these girls in our own backyard in Tampa when I was here, her being trafficked, and let's see how we can help. So there's always been this common understanding that as Christians, we help those who are in need. But I would say last June 2016, I went to a justice conference up in Chicago, and that was a pretty catalytic moment for me, pretty defining, because I got to listen to the mother of Jordan Davis. He was a young 17-year-old, I think, black man who, well, boy, who was gunned down in a gas station in Jacksonville, Florida. So we watched a documentary, 3.5 minutes, that followed his family and their journey through the justice system and the biases that were stacked against them and all kinds of things. And then Jordan Davis's mother, I think Lucy is her name, she came out and sat on a panel and she was talking about how this, the culture we live in and we contribute to or we choose to ignore, all of these cultural factors contributed to the death of her son. And she used this word complicit that I had never heard in that context before. And she just basically said, y'all need to get engaged on this side. You're going to have to answer before God. And it really just, it really shook the core of me. I was just sort of crying silent tears. And I felt like I was in the deep end of a pool, just treading water. And what I heard from God in that moment was stay exactly where you are. Stay in this feeling of being overwhelmed. Stay right here where you feel powerless. Don't go and start a nonprofit. Don't go in, you know, don't go back to church and say, okay, now we're going to jump on, you know, X, Y, Z. Like, you just need to stay and be overwhelmed and stick with me here in this place. And so that was June 2016. And from that point, I began to kind of branch out in my research and my journey and my exploring, people I followed, books I read, all of this, and sort of not made a detour, but just a change of trajectory, really, from my focus had been, at least in official capacity at church, how are we helping feed and do backpack drives and get donations for turkeys. And so there's this feeding component of people who are hungry or in need. There's mm-hmm. this donation component, which all the churches I've been involved in are very strong. You know, they understand, they do this, they're very generous. But for me personally, that June 2016 conference and hearing Jordan Davis's story was, it was like a major change for me. Okay, well, now let's start looking at the why, kind of the why. I don't know how else to say that.
Right.
And I began to wonder, from a theological standpoint, how did we get here?
mm-hmm. Right.
How did we get to a point where at least in the cultures I grew up in, it was understood that Christians give and are generous, that we're kind, but this other end of the pool that I was treading water in, so to speak, I didn't see a lot of chatter. I didn't have anything to draw from. With all the teaching I'd been exposed to and all of my well-intentioned mentors, I didn't have any frame of reference to draw from that said, hey, our history as an American church is not really much to be proud of. We haven't been advancing the cause of civil rights. We haven't been advocating for systemic changes. We pretty much shied away from the public square with this idea that we should be neutral on issues, but in being neutral, we've been quiet, and in being quiet, we haven't trained our congregants in how to engage critically, to look at how public policy affects people. That was definitely something difficult to journal, to wrestle through.
Well, the journey in the church, I guess you can look at it as being an intentional one, in terms of those things you were saying, that the reaction from the church and the historical framework of the church involvement within those particular justice issues. Nowadays, even looking at churches who are trying to transition into addressing those issues, are finding that it's the worst wrestling match that they've ever been involved in, especially from the framework of the pastor of the church, the leader of the church. So in that context, since you've been in that environment a great majority of your life, how has this affected you in terms of looking at people and walking beside them, and not so much looking to help them, but to understand them?
So I think what I've had to do is I've just had to own, really come into, if this is what God's calling me to, if this is what he's opening my own eyes to, if this is a new lens and this whole paradigm shift I'm going through, I think my biggest commitment has been how am I going to own this April? How am I going to incorporate this in my own life personally? Because, I shouldn't ask anyone else to lead me, to follow me.
Yeah.
Somewhere I haven't gone myself, right? I shouldn't have an expectation that leaders in whatever church I'm attending would be further down the road if this is something God's bringing to my attention. And part of that self-preservation, honestly it is, because if I don't start with self-examination and how do I stand before the Lord with what I know, and then what am I going to do about it? Like, am I following through? If I don't start with myself and I'm only pointing fingers at, you know, why didn't anybody tell me this? why have my traditions I've grown up in only pointed to two justice issues, or really two issues only, and this is what determines how we vote. This is what we, you know, basically traditional marriage and abortion. Those are the things I've only ever been taught. that this is what we care about as Christians when we think about the public square. And I'm looking at scripture and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much more. Like, you look through Leviticus and Proverbs, there's all these commandments just on simple things like do not move the widow's boundary line, and how God condemns people who change boundary lines. And so now I'm thinking about indigenous people, and I'm thinking about, we didn't just steal their land. We kept, even if we gave them a lot or whatever, once we found resources, we would change the boundary lines again. And scripture speaks to this, that he cares about this. That's a justice issue. But these are things I'm discovering pretty much on my own, and I'm committed to examining my heart and my worldview first before I leverage any expectations on anybody else at this point. And that's just, like I said, self-preservation, like to not go crazy, yeah, kind of, basically.
Yeah. But I mean, as you take this journey and you spoke to the fact that you're delving into some readings, some writings and materials of folks, but are you assimilating with others of that other people of culture or other classes or people who you really need to, as I always tell people, we need to sit down and listen to people in order to understand, yeah, where they are and where they're going through, because I don't think any one of us has walked completely in everybody's shoes, or even
absolutely,
you know, we have a hard time walking our own shoes, to be frank about it. So how are you focusing
absolutely
in on it?
Yeah, so for me, it's a two-pronged approach.
Okay.
It's online,
okay,
and it's in real life. It's both, or it's maybe three-pronged. Anyway, it's online. It's with books, so it's people that I may be having like distant conversations, and like honestly through Twitter. Twitter's been a game changer for me, finding people who are who identify as Christians and who deeply care about justice issues and who are willing to get into the mess of how does this play out practically. Because I think any Christian would say, of course I'm for justice in the abstract atmosphere of, you know, do we give that a thumbs up? But then when it trickles down to how does this play out in public policy, how does this play out on a local level, how does it play out on a national level, that's where it gets real messy, right? And I'm, mm-hmm, I'm following some people I really respect who have been doing this for way longer than I have, and who are kind of like mentors ahead of the game. I've never met them before. So in my real world life,
yeah,
I've just been seeking out, I've been investing more in friendships with friends of color, and I've had them, but it's like before June 2016, we had maybe a few conversations about issues of race and the church, and maybe one or two. And after my sort of, you know, I'm going to like break your heart and smash it to 1,000 pieces, thus saith the Lord experience, I shifted into like a deep curiosity. And so with my friends in real life, I, you know, would seek them out and would take the risk of saying the wrong thing or maybe my motives being misunderstood. And I found that there was this really great friendship. I had a roommate in college, and we hadn't seen each other. We lived together in college back in, I don't know, maybe 2002. And now that I'm back in Tampa, she's in Orlando. She came over one night and we stayed up till midnight. We had never discussed like, what was it like growing up with your parents or immigrants? What was it? How has it been like growing? We never touched on these issues. So we're talking through some of these things. And I think I'll just be frank, for a white person, you have to do both. I think that you have to be engaged in like some of the bigger conversations that are happening with justice leaders. Follow Lisa Sharon Harper, follow Latasha Morrison with Be the Bridge. Shane Claiborne has really great things to say. Rich Villadosa is a pastor up in New York who just preached an amazing sermon on the systemic nature of sin and racism this past Sunday. So I have these people I follow, and I'm learning from them. I'm kind of creeping into the back of the room. I'm listening to their podcast. Truth Table is another podcast. Pass the Mic is another podcast. So I'm listening into the conversation, and God is challenging me and shifting things in the way, you know, in my heart. I'm questioning things. And then in my real life friendships, you know, like our entire conversations are not about race, because that would just be awkward. And I don't, like, there are other things. We're talking about our kids, and we're talking about our husband's jobs. And so we're sharing life together, but we are unpacking some of these things. And I've also learned like, not everybody thinks the same thing, and to give and to not make assumptions. So I don't know. So it's a two-pronged approach for sure. And I think that the books you're reading, the podcasts you're listening to, they have to be complemented with real life in-person conversations. And then I think those conversations are best served if you're engaged in some of these online, I don't know if that makes sense, conversations as well.
Yeah, but how are you dealing with, I could probably talk a little while about this, but, you know, even with that approach, is it even touching on the institutional aspect of it? Or are you just dealing on the interpersonal level?
So my friends in real life, I don't know how else to say it. I know them from church, and the church I attend is probably like a typical conservative evangelical church. So we're not diving into institutional systemic injustice stuff. But because I'm committed to what's happening on a local level and how can I get involved, I joined my local chapter of the NAACP. And so as we're having, and I'm on the education committee because I used to teach and I care about reform. So with those friendships that are just barely starting, we are having conversations about really practical things that definitely touch on the systemic nature of racism and inequality and everything. So I basically was like, I'm going to go find where the conversation's happening and literally, not metaphorically, slip into the back of the room, but like literally sit myself in the back of the room, listen, and sign up if they need help. So.
Well, okay. So you're not saying that you totally, hope you're not saying it, that you totally abandoned the church aspect and instituting change or conversation there, but moving more to okay. So how are you?
No, not at all.
Are you finding that conversation is able to take place within the church where you are now?
So the difference between April in Virginia Beach and April in Tampa is April in Virginia Beach was part of the conversations. I had a really strong relationship with our teaching pastor, and executive pastor was my supervisor. So we got to move some really cool things forward. We were part of a diversity lunch, and I wrote the questions, and we now they've launched this partnership and friendship with Bishop Macbeth. So I had proximity to the conversation, and that was it was fruitful and things were moving. In Tampa, I'm not, even though I'm married to a pastor, I'm not on staff, so I'm not privy to what conversations are being had. And my husband and I are talking through things. He's over groups and discipleship. So we're talking through things, and he's committed to sort of reconciling sort of the should be, where should, could the church be, and where we are right now. So we're having creative conversations, but my access and proximity is very, very different than it used to be. So my joining the NAACP and working with refugees here is more like about my personal commitment. I don't represent the church the way I used to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And that brings it to your statement, you know, the one I picked out of one of the conversations that we had, that you're hoping more and more white churches become uncomfortable places for prejudice and deep-seated racism. It should be an inhospitable environment for these things. How do you, I understand how April was trying to affect it in Virginia Beach, but how is April trying to affect that within their hood down in Tampa?
Yes. April is trying to figure out. Trying to figure that out. I don't have the answer to that. So I would say for anyone who is living in this tension of the church I grew up in or the church I currently attend is predominantly white, or race isn't on the radar, and we're just kind of tucking our head down, and our discipleship and formation looks like a lot of Bible classes and taking care of our families and moral purity, right? So those are values that are held high, but we're not wrestling with what's happening in the city or what's happening on a national level. I think that's a pretty big burden to shoulder, and it's worth praying through and talking through. I know at this church there's a commitment. This is a very diverse church. Tony Dungy attends and teaches a class here, and you know, he was just tweeting yesterday about some of the things that are playing out with NFL and the NBA, take a knee or stand for the anthem, all of that. So he's been engaged, and he and his wife have been doing amazing work for foster care. That sounds like a helicopter.
Yeah.
Are you on the Little Creek base right now?
No. It's someone that doing a construction project next door, so I guess they were over their lunch break and started back up. So.
Got it. So I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged locally here, but because I can, I've got my sphere of influence, I'm doing what I can with that. And I think for every white ally, so to speak, that's definitely something, some soul searching to do. For me, it was very clear what the Lord spoke back in June, and that's before we knew we were even moving. And it was stay. It was stay exactly where you are, exactly where you're planted, and find a way to bring these issues and these concerns to light with all the love and gentleness you can muster. But that was his word to me, and it may be different to other people. But I think that I'm a firm believer that our God is creative, and that regardless of any person's proximity or access to the lead teacher, right, to the voice in the heart of the church, regardless of how close or far away we are, I believe that God is creative and can place us in key relationships, can open our eyes, if we're searching for it, can open our eyes to really practical things to do, and then to bring a few people along with us. And that may be it, that might be all we're called to do. Or it may be to ask if we can lead a class on systemic injustice or justice in God's heart in the Bible and how it's revealed to us. I got to teach a class like that. I wrote my own curriculum and everything exactly a year ago. And it was promoted within the church. That's not a privilege that a lot of people have or something they may be interested in. But I think that God's creative. And I think the worst thing if I could just speak to my white brothers and sisters listening in, I think the worst thing for us to do would be to respond as God's opening your eyes and you're learning more and you're diversifying your newsfeed and you're reading books and you're seeing this sort of like overarching, oh my goodness, this is real, right? Waking up to this is real. This is a real problem. I think the worst thing we could do is is get to a point of paralysis where we feel like there's nothing we can do. I think it's good to be overwhelmed. It's good to learn how to lament and to really sit with something and to not to run in or rush into whatever project with this new solution we've come up with. So there's for sure a listening and grieving and soul searching period. But it's almost like what scripture says when we grieve, right? We grieve, but not without hope. Like we have a hope, not just for our bodily resurrection, but we have a hope for the resurrection of the church, so to speak. And so I would just, my word would just be like, know that our God is creative, and regardless of access to influence, so to speak, or can you launch a new partnership, or can you teach it, like all of that off the table, God is creative and will make a way for us to continue learning and to partner in really practical ways.
Wow, that's...
I don't know if I answered your question. I don't know.
It's encouraging. I mean, it's really encouraging. But it made me think about something we were talking about before we came on the air in terms of sitting in a group, like a home group, and dealing with the tension there when the folks really don't want to have these discussions for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And deciding where you need to stay there, or as you said, is there hope for change, and maybe God is trying to show me something within this group, you know, that I need to learn about.
Right.
But I think a lot of us get trapped in those situations, and we stay too long in certain places, not knowing when to leave, and we started looking at it more of being a self-survival kind of thing, an acceptance, so to speak. But how do you march out of it? How have you marched out of those things, or have you just stayed there and endured?
Well, I've been surprised, like pleasantly baffled by some of the people who have told me I've shared a community group with in the past, who have told me later, pulled me aside and said, "Hey, I just want to thank you for your influence on this and this and this, and it's helped me see things differently because I feel like we didn't spend a lot of time on April's justice issues, right? Because most times I was leading the group, and so you're there to serve, you're not there to push your agenda. So I've been really surprised, and so I would encourage people who are feeling that tension to not discount the influence that they may be having. That said, if you're on a merry-go-round and it seems like no one is seeking to understand the other person, then it may be time to get off the merry-go-round. So there's sometimes when I come up, like I know what my safe topics are, what my not safe topics are when I'm in certain settings. Everyone knows that. And so I'm not, when I'm with certain people or family members, my goal is not to convert them to my way of thinking. It's to enjoy the relationship that I have with them. And I know there will be no change. So I enjoy what the friendship and the relationship is, and I'm not trying to expect that it will be anything different, like a safe place for us to exchange ideas. And so you kind of come to terms with that. But if there's a community, right, like so community groups should be places where we can discuss the Bible and we can exchange ideas and interpretations. We can encourage each other and support each other. Should absolutely have a rock bed foundation of respect. And so there would be some self-examination again. Am I being a good listener? Am I really seeking to understand, or am I only being persuasive? And am I acknowledging what fear they may have, or what anger they may have, or what incident they went through that leads them to the place they are right now? So if we are not doing that, that's something to examine and to possibly repent from and ask God to help us and change us. But if it seems like it's just a back and forth, like today I got into a little Twitter feud kind of thing. There were two other people. I jumped off of it, And I messaged one of the girls. She's like president of some atheist club. I was like, hey, I'd be happy to discuss this with you over here. But it's just getting crazy over there. It's like a shouting match. And you know what? She didn't respond. She enjoyed the shouting match. So I got off that merry-go-round. I was like, peace out. You guys aren't trying to listen to each other. You're not trying to seek to understand the other. You're only raising your voices incrementally, and it's doing nobody no good. Like, it's not doing anyone good. So I don't know, for whatever that's worth, I don't know if that's helpful or not. I don't know.
Yeah. It was a conversation, that I was involved in with several blacks and several whites. And, one of the traditional statements that came up from one of the whites was basically, why don't you all just get over it, kind of thing, and accept it.
Wow.
And so a friend of mine said, following that statement, and they asked this question, would you tell a woman that is being abused by her partner to love that person out of their violence and hatred?
Right.
And so,
the
person thought about it, and they thought about it, and actually that one sentence or question opened up that person's eyes that, I'm looking at this in all the wrong way. And so started a whole dialogue. I mean, this group has been together, I don't know, maybe 4 months. And that was the one point where everything started changing. That's when acceptance started, when the listening started, because a lot of times in these groups, we go into those groups and we go in there and want to talk about experiences of the world instead of talking about personal experiences. Because until we do personal, we can't go anywhere else. I mean, it's easy for me to sit down and talk about somebody getting shot in Missouri or New York or wherever. But what has happened in Charles Cheekline? What has happened in April's life that we can talk about, that we can gel with, and at some point come to see each other in a different light and understand the person? Because I truly believe that we can't have understanding until we get to know one another, not know of one another, but know one another. Because so often we want to point the finger. We want to look at, and I applaud people who can work through systems, but I'm not a system person, so I'm not even going to go there. Because when you started looking and examining systems in these group settings, you get taken off somewhere where I think you shouldn't be going, or you shouldn't go. It takes away from the personalization of the conversation. I think there's a point in time where you can deal with systemic institutional injustices. After you can kind of coalesce together in a more relational setting and understand one another. And I'm not saying about the controlling issue, because I just don't believe we should be even thinking about controlling. But when I do get in these discussion groups, and I kind of tell people that because of your historical dominance as a white person, you're going to try to control it. I mean, you just can't help it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in you.
Mm-hmm.
That's started some interesting conversations. But by the time we get down the road somewhere, they can acknowledge that, because it's always about this thing about I can control it. I have to have this control of the subject matter. I need to control the topic. I'm not going to let you within my sphere, because I want to control my emotions. I don't want you to, as one person told me, said, I don't want you to control how I feel.
Someone said that in one of your groups?
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Wow.
So, after saying all that, I want to go back to this thing about survival, and I want to look at it in a couple of contexts, because one of the things I see and I've experienced through this long life that I've had, not quite as long as Moses yet, but I'm thinking that a lot, oftentimes we don't go into this subject matter, especially in the church, the institutional church, to try to look at change and address issues of race or class or anything along those lines in terms of justice, is because the church wants to survive wherever it is at this point. Anything that would take them in a different path or direction, even though it's the correct thing to do, it's the correct statement, we look at that adjustment period as being, how do I survive through this? Can I maintain a lifestyle, one, and without upsetting the apple cart and getting a whole lot of folks upset and leave and, that particular environment. So I go back to that one statement I always say to people: unless you know the day you're going to die, you don't have time to wait to tomorrow, unless God is telling you to wait for some other thing to happen where you can influence something that's going around you in that particular moment and period of time. I know that's saying a whole lot and jumping a lot of different places with that, but I think this whole thing with self-preservation and survival kind of gets in our way at times in terms of doing or acting out what needs to be done correctly, or said what needs to be said. And then we start, but I noticed one thing, in our early text messages back and forth, which, by the way, I've got authorized in the finger, so I'm not going to do that anymore, we need to be more intentional about doing what's right.
Yeah.
And shaping it and letting people know that this is wrong, where we need to go. Because it's just like, I'm going to ask you a question in a minute, but it's just like going to an NAACP meeting and getting on a committee, a meeting lasts an hour and a half, and you come back for another meeting another month or 2 weeks or that committee, and what has been resolved? What has been solved? It's the same thing with the church. You hear the sermon on Sunday, and they're talking about injustices and how the Bible speaks to how we're supposed to get up and be the hands and feet of Jesus and do the right thing and help and guide others along the way. But a lot of stuff in life gets in the way.
Yeah, and I can tell you, because I've had close relationships with the two teaching pastors at my previous churches, I can tell you there's a sense of, one of them was like, April, you're overwhelming me. We're like, there's a sense of being overwhelmed. Like, do we do everything? How do we choose? I even attended a workshop. So this is a workshop literally at the Justice Conference on how do you discern where and what God is calling your specific congregation to? Like, which issue in the community are you partnering with? Or what are you going to draw your attention? And I don't understand from experience, but from proximity, I can empathize with the sense that probably a lot of pastors have, and it's, we only have so much time on Sunday to preach, or we only have so much in our budget to launch new partnerships or to commit to a couple different missionaries, internationally. And so how do we choose and how do we lead our people? So that is a conversation, but I think that's the second conversation. I think the first conversation that really, really weighs on me I don't know, it's a whole can of worms. First, I'm going to stop myself real quick and just, I think you're about to ask a question. Were you about to ask a question, or am I speaking to what you were getting at?
You're actually speaking to what I was getting at.
Okay, so I empathize with that feeling, and I haven't had to shoulder the leadership of a church or determine what to preach on every Sunday, but what weighs on me and what I've spent a good time wrestling with in Scripture is our worldview. It's almost like, what are we calling Christians to? I would not place the expectation on a young mom of three kids that if she's not going to the meetings I'm going to, or she's not serving with a, you know, organization in Tampa that's helping women get out of trafficking, or she's not, you know, down at city council meetings, that she's not a true Christian or following the Lord, right? We would never say that. But because we choose to participate in churches and identify with a particular expression of the local church, right? We attend church. I'm assuming this of most of the audience. I feel like there should be a corporate identification that we are, as a church, we are engaged in the city. And I think a lot of churches do this. They have partnerships. They really do. What I would love to see is for there to be a willingness to look at the why. And I don't know exactly how that happens, but why are girls of color like significantly more susceptible to being trafficked? So we care about people who are hungry. Why are 46% of black children under six living in poverty, where 14% of white children under six live in poverty in the United States? Like, if we can peel back the layers and ask why, then we can own some of this. And it's really difficult to, because then it begins to implicate us. When you start talking about not just individual choice, right? Like, April, if I had just stayed at that table at the Justice Conference listening to Lucy just cry and talk about how there's this system, there are these spiritual principalities, there are these strongholds at play, and if we don't choose to engage in some little way, we're complicit. As if I had just stuck with my individualized understanding of Christianity, all I would have felt was defensive. All I would have felt was, Lucy, what are you talking about? I wasn't in Jacksonville. If I had been at that gas station, of course I would have said something. I wasn't one of the members on the jury. I wasn't the judge. I wasn't the police who ordered the drug test of his friends, but not of the man who shot your son. Like, we are so wrapped up in this individual, but I didn't do this. But my parents weren't slaveholders, but we didn't blah, blah, blah. That there's a stiffness. Like, we can't bend, we'll just snap, we'll just break. There's a stiffness in these strong defensive mechanisms instead of the freeing truth there is that we can step into, and I think the church has the opportunity to step into. There's this freedom in saying, you know what? Like God has called us to repentance corporately. So we identify as a church body, and we identify as the Christians in America, there's this corporate identity we have, and we need to own it, and we need to be part of it, and we need to be okay in it. And when we're okay in it, we can say, I'm okay because God loves me, because I'm a sinner, but God still loves me. There's this unconditional love that I have from the Lord. When I rest in that, then I can step into true repentance. Then I can step into true examination and say, how have I been oblivious to this up until this point? How have I not felt a certain sense of obligation to care for my brother? How have I been like Cain, you know? Like, am I my brother's keeper? How have I done that with my life, with my purchasing choices, with the way I leverage my vote, with my paying attention to what's happening in the news or not? We will be unable to ask those questions if we don't get to a deeper level of God does have an expectation of local bodies that gather together. He does look at the American church as a whole. There is a corporate identity that we carry, and so what are we going to do about our little piece of it?
Well, We've got about 10 minutes left. I want to look at something quickly here. It's something you said, staying in your place. God is keeping you in, or putting you in a place, or had you in a place. Are you still working your way out of that place? And where do you see April in the next year or so?
I don't know. I really don't know. I honestly am taking this fall to figure out what April's going to be when she grows up. And part of my journey is looking at law school and also looking at an online seminary program. So those are two distinct different career paths, and I'm trying to figure out what that is or if there's something else out there. So, yeah. I don't know. It's gonna be at the intersection of probably church and probably justice and advocacy, but I don't know how it plays out. And you know, if you have any wisdom, let me know, please.
with the whole thing you mentioned the law. I mean, what's your frame of reference in terms of that the justice part, or you might get more frustrated if you go that route. I'm not going to say you will, but I know some good lawyers too. So.
Yeah. As far as law goes, like immigration reform or criminal justice reform. I'd love to abolish the death penalty in Florida. I'd love to get Stand Your Ground struck down forever in Florida. There are a lot of things happening here. I'm doing my history, my work, and digging around and just realizing how deeply embedded racism and racist structures are here. Coming up and naming that principality and seeing how it raises its head in everyday life. So yeah, I'm paying attention to that, and I don't know what it'll look like for me to engage long term. But for now, I'm just trying to take my baby steps.
Yeah. Besides the Twitter feed, have you started any circles within your friends or extended your friendship out into others?
Yeah.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's so slow. It is slow going. It's slow going. So I probably have like 5 or 6 friends who wanted to do a book club, the new Jim Crow, look at mass incarceration. We've had some scheduling conflicts. And then I've got another friend who is starting a network for women in Tampa who want to be engaged with justice issues and women who want to contribute their time and talent and resources, and then women who are on the receiving end who could benefit from an entrepreneur's workshop or benefit from a how to start a nonprofit workshop. So I can't really speak more to that because it's not my baby, but I'm showing up to the meetings and the conversations and trying to figure out how I can contribute to that.
Well, you know, a couple of weeks ago we had a peace circle or reconciliation. It's probably one of the better activities that I've participated in, conversation on race and reconciliation, because it was more personal with the folks. It was not based on what you read or what you saw, but it was based on actual experiences. So people were able to understand and appreciate one another on a more personal level. And you can see how it started drawing folks who didn't know each other closer together. So the intentionality was, in fact, I had 2 white pastors there and 2 white females, 2 black males, 2 black females, et cetera. 2 by 2, like going in the ark kind of thing. So, so we all were having these revealing conversations about one another and our personal experiences, and some had not, you know. And the basis of it is that you have to listen, and you can't sit there and listen to somebody and formulate a response. It can only be about yourself, because a lot of times we do listen to people only to respond with something that's so generic that it really doesn't fit the conversation at the time. But what we'll do is, in fact, we're going to have a training on this on December the 2nd, because it was a result of the vice chair of the board of directors of Christian Community Development Association. And since it worked well here, you're going to take this thing nationally. So we'll certainly include you guys down there in the dialogue, and what happens with it, and possibly pass along the procedures and what happens with it and the results, and it'll give me a good reason to come to Tampa to show you guys. So we'll look at those things with you as you journey through what you're going
right.
through. At the same time, you know, what one of the things I want to push out there is something that an old lady told me a long time ago when I was a young guy. And she said, always make sure you listen and stay in a place to listen and learn from people. But at the same time, don't listen so much that you start taking on their dream and you lose it, you lose yours.
That's good.
Yeah, and I thought a lot of that comes back every once in a while and slaps me in the face. And because sometimes you get sucked into things. And it's not intentional, but you just keep on getting sucked in, like with that Twitter feed thing. And fortunately, you broke out of it because sometimes you just can't contribute everything to everybody or something to everybody.
Yep.
I just want to applaud you in your journey. Always enjoy
Thank
talking
you.
With you.
Thanks for being part of it.
Yeah, anything that we can do, just feel free to call upon us, and we're always going to be here for you, because if it wasn't for you, our social life would not be in a certain place over in Virginia Beach. And just to let you know, it's thriving and doing well.
Awesome.
I think Angela is listening to this program today, and Angela is doing a great job. And so she's taking up the mantle for April, and she often says to me or asks the question, what would April do? And I have to answer that question.
I don't know about that.
So I just jump in there and answer that question. This is what April would do, you know, kind of thing. So thank you again. Thank you for taking
Thanks,
the time
Kyle.
Out today and being here with us. A year from now, we're going to revisit April, and we're going to see where April is. And
All right.
if she hasn't written that book and it's on sale and on the New York Times bestselling list, and then we'll know what to do with April at that point. So thank you.
All right.
Have a good day.
Right.
My best to everybody.
Thank you. You too. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening in for another episode of Front Porch Conversation on Justice. We hope that you will be more intentional about addressing the issues and the things that are in our lives that cause uncomfort for not only ourselves but for others. And be very intentional about going out, making a friend, listening to someone, understanding them, and then loving on them. God bless you and have a great day.